This is VOA News. I'm Marissa Melton. The European Union will adapt its state aid rules to prevent an exodus of investment triggered by a new U.S. green energy subsidy package. This, according to the bloc's chief executive on Sunday, European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen made these remarks in a speech in Belgium.
Competition is good. We like it. It drives innovation. It enhances efficiency. It ensures progress. And in doing so, it brings down prices for clean technologies.
The 27-country bloc fears that the U.S. $430 billion Inflation Reduction Act, with its generous tax breaks, may lure away EU businesses and disadvantage European companies, from car manufacturers to makers of green technology. Von der Leyen said that good competition requires a level playing field. The Russian Energy Chief Deputy Prime Minister Alexander Novak said Sunday that Moscow will not sell oil that is subject to a Western price cap, even if it has to cut production. Novak called the $60 a barrel price cap imposed Friday on the group by the group of seven leading industrialized countries and Australia a gross interference in world energy trade, an action that could lead to a supply shortage. The cap aims to reduce Russia's oil earnings, which support its military and the invasion of Ukraine. The price cap takes effect on Monday. Meanwhile, the British Defense Ministry says a recent poll shows Russian public support for the war is dropping. It said data collected by Russia's Federal Protective Service indicates that 55% of Russians favor peace talks with Ukraine, while only 25% say they support continuing the war. From Washington, this is VOA News. The OPEC oil cartel has decided not to change its targets for sending oil to the global economy, with uncertainty looming over the effects of Western sanctions against Russia. AP correspondent Naomi Shannon has more.
The Saudi-led Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries meets ahead of an EU boycott of most Russian oil and a price cap of $60 per barrel on Russian exports. Back in October, OPEC announced a 2 million barrels per day cut in oil production that still remains in effect and was met with much criticism. But while the US and Europe want to punish Russia for the war in Ukraine, they also want to prevent a sudden loss of Russian crude that could send oil and gasoline prices back up. I'm Naomi Shannon.
I've just attended a meeting of the National Working Committee. And I have been recused from the meeting because they are going to discuss the panel's report. It's always best when a matter that affects a person personally should be discussed in their absence.
That's South African President Cyril Ramaphosa, who said on Sunday it was up to the governing party's executive committee to decide his future in light of allegations of misconduct. Ramaphosa is fighting for his political future after a panel of experts found he may have violated his oath of office. Ramaphosa has denied any wrongdoing and has not been charged with any crimes. The Pentagon chief says he wants to keep the U.S. military's COVID-19 vaccine mandate in place to protect the health of the troops. AP correspondent Jackie Quinn has more.
Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin's making it clear he supports a continuation of mandatory COVID vaccines for military personnel. He tells reporters, "We lost a million people in this country to the virus and hundreds in the Defense Department." More than 20 Republican governors sent a letter to President Biden asking the administration remove the mandate, which they say hurts the National Guard's ability to recruit troops. Congress may consider legislation this coming week to end mandates as part of the defense budget process. Jackie Quinn, Washington.
Nigerian police said on Sunday that gunmen abducted 19 Muslim worshippers after attacking a mosque in northwest Nigeria. The attackers stormed the mosque in Katsina State during evening prayers on Saturday. A local police spokesman said they carried out the kidnappings after shooting and wounding the imam and another worshipper. The spokesman said police rescued six of the worshippers. He said efforts were underway to recover the remaining 13 kidnapped victims. Authorities say last month, 15 people were killed and several others wounded in a series of attacks in Kaduna State. Marissa Melton, VOA News.
Today is Monday, December 5th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, U.S. accuses Russia of, quote, deliberate cruelty, unquote, as the Kremlin continues to pound Ukraine energy and civilian infrastructure.
Russian forces have killed thousands of Ukrainian citizens, even as millions more have fled. And Russian attacks have left children dead, schools shattered, hospitals smashed.
Turkey and Italy find common ground on Africa and a migration crisis.
Meloni and Erdogan have strained relations with French president over incidents, including one in which Italian authorities recently refused to allow a ship carrying migrants to dock.
And France and England reach Qatar World Cup quarterfinals. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin has accused Russia of, quote, deliberate cruelty, unquote, in its war in Ukraine, saying Moscow was intentionally targeting civilians. Austin told the Reagan National Defense Forum in Simi Valley, California, that Russian attacks have left children dead and destroyed hospitals and schools. This, as a UN-appointed investigation team said it was looking into whether Russia's attacks on critical infrastructure in Ukraine amount to war crimes. Russia has been pounding Ukraine's electricity supply and infrastructure since early October, causing blackouts and leaving millions without heating as temperatures plummet. U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin.
And Putin's war is not the result of NATO expansion. It is the cause of NATO expansion. And now, because of the Kremlin's longing for a vanished empire, Europe faces its worst security crisis since the end of World War II. And a member of the UN Security Council, let me say that again, a member of the UN Security Council is waging war to deny democracy to more than 43 million people. With deliberate cruelty, Russia is putting civilians and civilian infrastructure in its gun sights. Russian forces have killed thousands of Ukrainian citizens, even as millions more have fled. And Russian attacks have left children dead, schools shattered, and hospitals smashed. So Russia's neighbors view its imperial aggression with growing alarm. And Putin's war of choice has given everyone on Earth a preview of a world of tyranny and turmoil that nobody would want to live in.
That's U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin. As fighting intensifies around the eastern Ukrainian city of Bakhmut, the Kremlin said Russian President Vladimir Putin is open to negotiations on Ukraine, but that the West must recognize, quote, Russia's new territories, unquote. It comes after U.S. President Joe Biden said he was willing to talk if Putin was looking for a way to end the war. Julian Kishner of Reuters reports.
A wounded Ukrainian soldier is carried by stretcher into a field hospital close to the front line in the embattled city of Bakhmut as repeated Russian efforts to seize the area have transformed it into a center of intense fighting. A 33-year-old military paramedic who would only give his first name, Ivan, said the fighting came in sudden, deadly waves.
This work is different because you have a very small period of very high casualties. And there are a lot of going on. This is very, very fast, and all the battalions have casualties, and you need to treat them fast. And it goes like 1 week, and it's over. So either we win, or either we are forced to back.
Another Ukrainian service member who called himself Vladislav said it seemed like the Russians were attacking haphazardly.
Judging from their equipment and the way they look, their actions and movements, they are simply creeping in, running, walking. They don't have trained military staff, tactics.
Ivan said it appeared activity was ramping up on both sides.
Now we are preparing for something, I don't know, but thanks God we have little casualties these last 2 days.
Ukraine says Bakhmut is the main target for Moscow's artillery attacks, while Russian forces in the south remained on the defensive. Western countries are trying to boost aid for Ukraine as it reels from Russian missile and drone attacks targeting key energy infrastructure that have left millions without heating, electricity, and water. Russian President Vladimir Putin, who calls his intervention in Ukraine a special military operation, said Friday he was open to negotiations, but that the West must recognize Russia's new territories, parts of Ukraine it claims to have annexed, in a move condemned as illegal by most countries. Putin's comment came after discussions between U.S. President Joe Biden and French President Emmanuel Macron, where Biden said he was ready to speak with Putin if the Russian leader was interested in ending the war.
If that's the case, in consultation with my French and my NATO friends, I'll be happy to sit down with Putin to see what he wants, has in mind. He hasn't done that yet.
Biden has not spoken directly with Putin since Russia invaded Ukraine on February 24th. In March, Biden branded Putin a butcher who cannot stay in power. Ukraine and the West say Putin has no justification for what they cast as an imperial-style war of occupation in which thousands of civilians have been killed. Kyiv says it will fight until the last Russian soldier is ejected from its territory.
That's Gillian Kitchener of Reuters. Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan and Italy's newly elected far-right Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni appear to be finding unlikely common ground on issues relating to Africa and migration. The relationship with Meloni is the latest in a list of strong partnerships that Erdogan had been working to build with European far-right leaders. Dorian Jones reports from Istanbul.
At the first meeting of Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan and Italy's Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni, there were smiles and a warm handshake on the sidelines of the G20 gathering in Indonesia. Despite their diametrically opposed policies, including Meloni's call to freeze mosque construction in Italy and Erdogan's positioning himself as a defender of Muslim rights, some analysts say the two have found firm common ground. Hüseyin Barca is the head of the Foreign Policy Institute, an Ankara-based research organization.
Tayyip Erdogan is Islamist and Turk. Meloni is Christian and Italian, so they understand each other much better. They don't talk about certain values, democratic values. They talk about the religious values. They talk about the nationalistic values. And I think they will understand each other much better than the other.
One of Meloni's priorities is to stem migration from Africa, much of which comes through Libya. Turkey has strong ties with Libya's government of national unity, giving Erdogan an important bargaining chip, say analysts, including Aya Buwela, a visiting lecturer on international relations at the Hellenic National Defense College in Athens.
Turkey now has a base in West Libya. It controls all critical infrastructure in West Libya. And as you know, West Libya is a very important human trafficking point to Europe. So Turkey now has a base in North Africa.
But with tensions between Turkey and Greece rising over territorial disputes, Rome could pay a high cost for deepening ties with Ankara. Turkey also has strained relations with Egypt, an important trading partner of Italy. Jalel Hajawi at the Global Initiative Against Transnational Organized Crime.
I think Italy has not forgotten that it's a European nation. I wouldn't say that Italy, I mean, obviously, Italy also has a lot of hydrocarbons business going with Egypt. It's not in the business of angering Egypt particularly. So I would really keep a distinction between Turkey and Italy. Italy is not very happy to see this level of controversy.
Meloni and Erdogan both have strained relations with French President Emmanuel Macron over incidents, including one in which Italian authorities recently refused to allow a ship carrying migrants to dock. The vessel then had to go to France, where the migrants finally disembarked. The Turkish and Italian leaders also aim to challenge France's lucrative economic interests in Africa. Erdogan also has years of experience working with far-right European leaders, like Hungary's Prime Minister Viktor Orban. Senem Aydınduzgit is a professor of international relations at Sabancı University near Istanbul.
He actually has a good working relationship with Islamophobe autocrats like Orban, for instance. So you see, it doesn't matter if she's far-right. And I think it might even work more to his interest that she is, because the current Turkish government is quite happy to see a Europe that's disunited, that is devoid of so-called values.
Istanbul's newest bridge was built by an Italian company. Trade is the bedrock of Italian-Turkish ties, which the two countries' leaders appear ready to build upon. Dorian Jones for VOA News, Istanbul.
Thank you, Darian. Iran's public prosecutor is saying that the country's morality police have been shut down, but the interior ministry that oversees the force hasn't commented on the report. The death of 22-year-old Mahsa Amini after her arrest by the morality police has triggered months of protests. Matthew Lauritonda of Reuters reports.
Iran's public prosecutor is saying that the country's morality police have been shut down following the months of protests that have racked the nation in the wake of the death of Mahsa Amini, the 22-year-old woman who died in custody after her arrest by the morality police. Amini was arrested for flouting Iran's mandatory policy that women wear hijabs. But Iran's interior ministry, which is in charge of the morality police, has not confirmed that the force has been shut down, and state media say the public prosecutor, named Mohammad Jafar Montazeri, isn't responsible for its oversight. Meanwhile, state media are also reporting that the country's executed four men convicted of cooperating with the Israeli spy agency Mossad. Tehran's recently accused Israel and Western powers of plotting a civil war in Iran. The anti-government protests are some of the largest since Iran's 1979 revolution and have spilled into other international demonstrations of solidarity, including at the World Cup.
That's Matthew Lauritonda of Reuters. In other news, England captain Harry Kane scored his first goal of this year's World Cup to help his team beat Senegal 3-0 and set up a match against France in the quarterfinals. Kylian Mbappe scored two goals and set up another for Olivier Giroud to give France a 3-1 victory over Poland. The Paris Saint-Germain forward now has a tournament leading 5 goals, and the 2018 champions are within 3 wins of successfully defending their title. Africa's only remaining team, Morocco, will play Spain, while Brazil take on South Korea on Monday. You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Afua in Washington. A peace deal to end Ethiopia's 2-year civil war with Tigrayan forces was struck in November, but whether it will be honored remains to be seen. There's a desperate need for aid across much of Tigray, and on both sides, victims of possible war crimes are crying out for justice. Henry Wilkins, who reported for VOA from Ethiopia this year, has this report.
2020's Axum massacre saw Eritrean and Ethiopian troops carry out extrajudicial executions against civilians, indiscriminate shelling and widespread looting in the city in northern Tigray. Residents estimate hundreds were killed. Hiab Gebret Sadik is a survivor.
The federal government is actually the perpetrator of the crime, and the criminals cannot investigate their own crime. Justice should come from free international organizations like the UN, the EU, the African Union.
Like many in Ethiopia, he wants an accounting for the suffering that he said he and his community endured during the country's 2-year conflict. A peace deal was signed in South Africa in early November, and an end to the war may be in sight. But grievances stemming from possible war crimes remain. In September, a UN commission of inquiry on Ethiopia said starvation of civilians in Tigray was used by the government as a method of warfare, and that Ethiopian and Eritrean forces used sexual slavery against Tigrayan women and girls. Tigrayan forces, the UN said, didn't use such tactics, but were accused of war crimes, including rape in areas they occupied in the Amhara and Afar regions. This woman from Lalibela, who asked to remain anonymous out of fear, says she was 7 months pregnant when Tigrayan soldiers came to her house and raped her. She says the soldiers took her to a deserted area and raped her. They held her there for 6 days, from Monday to Saturday. She added that the local administration had already left the town. There were no police. Everyone left. It is only those of us who are helpless and weak, she says, adding that she was pregnant and her mother is blind. Although both sides have committed atrocities, the group Human Rights Watch, HRW, says it has documented a sustained campaign of ethnic cleansing against Tigrayans, much of which has taken place in darkness because media and human rights investigators cannot gain access to the Tigray region. Letitia Bader is the Horn of Africa director for Human Rights Watch. She says that since the peace deal, the amount of aid being allowed to enter Tigray
is not enough to meet the enormous needs there. And at the same time, the services, be it communications, electricity, banking, which are so critical to meeting the needs of the population as well, have not been restored by the federal government authorities. So we really are talking about a context in which abuses are ongoing.
Asked whether the peace deal is being implemented fast enough, one analyst, William Davison of the International Crisis Group, told VOA there are challenges in seeing it through.
It's not entirely clear how much progress has been made in sort of deconflicting the front lines, this disengagement process. Again, this doesn't mean that the deal is about to collapse. It just demonstrates how hard this process is.
Tigrayan leaders have repeatedly said they wish to hold a referendum to leave the Ethiopian Federation. Henry Wilkins for VOA News.
Hurricane survivors in Florida and Puerto Rico are receiving cash aid through a method that first helped people in Togo during the COVID-19 pandemic. The system uses satellite data and artificial intelligence to help get aid targeted to the neediest people. VOA Steve Barragona reports.
Eli Kamako is a Mason. He says business dried up in Togo's capital, Lomé, when the COVID-19 pandemic hit in 2020.
Without orders, we cannot work and earn a little money to feed our families. It was a blow for us.
Poverty threatened millions like Kamako worldwide. Governments scrambled to provide aid. But in a country of more than 8 million people, how do you locate the neediest? That's where satellite images came in, says University of California, Berkeley computer scientist Josh Blumenstock.
If you or I go to Google Maps or some satellite data provider and look at an aerial image of one town or another, you can sort of tell whether it's wealthy or not. Wealthier homes tend to have metal roofs, poorer homes tend to have thatched roofs. Wealthier neighborhoods have paved roads, bigger plots of land, more spaced out houses with fences and so forth. And so there's a lot of information in that imagery.
The researchers trained artificial intelligence to recognize these patterns. The AI came up with a map of the poorest regions of Togo. The next step was to target the neediest people in these regions. So they put AI to work studying patterns of mobile phone use, says Blumenstock's graduate student, Emily Aiken.
Rich people will make just more phone calls than poor people. They also might make more international calls, since those are very expensive. They might use more mobile data because they have smartphones, whereas in general, poorer people will just have feature phones.
Writing in the journal Nature, Aiken and colleagues concluded that the system did a better job identifying needy people than the Togolese government's first attempt to target aid did. Kamako says the program helped his family through a hard time. And experts say satellites and AI could also help quickly target aid in climate disasters, conflicts, and more. Steve Barragona, VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
Researchers led by the University of Alberta discovered two new minerals that have never been seen before on our planet. One of the minerals was named Elaleite and the other Elkinstantonite, which was named in honor of Lindy Elkinstanton from Arizona State University and the principal investigator of NASA's upcoming Psyche mission. The minerals were found in a 70-gram slice of the 15,000-kilogram Elaleite meteorite in Somalia. In a press release, University of Alberta professor Chris Hurd says, quote, "Whenever you find a new mineral, it means the actual geological conditions, the chemistry of the rock, was different than what was seen before," unquote. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
We're bringing women's voices to the conversation on things that matter to hearts and minds of women.
Here in Kinshasa, campaigns to raise awareness against the spread of coronavirus are common, but getting that information to people who have no access to water, electricity, or money can be a challenge.
With strong opinions and expertise on things that impact and change their lives.
I think a big thing for me is just being able to say that when these protests are happening, does it turn around into policy?
From right here in the nation's capital to on the ground from all over the African continent.
It really was powerful because it showed what is possible when men and women band together and say enough is enough.
We hear your voices, women's voices, our voices, and add your voice to the conversation. Each week, right here on The Voice of America, on Wednesdays at 1900 UTC.
Hey there, it's Shauna Renee, also known as the Lady DJ, inviting you to join me every Thursday at 10 and 2200 UTC for today's Hit Countdown. Each week I count down the top 20 songs in pop music according to Billboard and Rolling Stone magazines, but more importantly, according to you, the VOA listeners. Again, that's Thursdays at 10 and 2200 UTC right here on VOA 1.
This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours at voanews.com and check out voaafrica.com for more English language programming. You can find International Edition on our current affairs programs, Encounter, Press Conference USA, and Issues in the News on voanews.com. Until next time, I am Chinedu Afo in Washington. Have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
November was a significant month for relations between the United States and the People's Republic of China. On November 14th, President Joe Biden and PRC President Xi Jinping met for their first in-person encounter since both men assumed office. During the meeting, President Biden explained that the United States will continue to compete vigorously with the PRC, and he reiterated that this competition must not veer into conflict. President Biden underscored that the United States and the PRC must maintain open lines of communication, and the two leaders agreed to empower key senior officials to deepen constructive efforts on areas of shared interest. Since then, there have been several high-level encounters between officials of the two countries. In each encounter, U.S. officials emphasized the need for communication between the United States and the PRC. On November 18th, Vice President Kamala Harris met briefly with President Xi on the sidelines of the Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation, or APEC, Economic Leaders Meeting in Bangkok. Also on the margins of the APEC meeting on November 18th, U.S. Trade Representative Catherine Tai met with her counterpart, PRC Commerce Minister Wang Wentao, for their first face-to-face meeting. In addition to discussing bilateral trade, Ambassador Tai shared with Minister Wang the U.S. vision for APEC, which the United States will host in 2023. A few days later, on November 22nd, U.S. Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin met with the PRC's Minister of National Defense, Wei Fang-ge, in Cambodia on the sidelines of an Association of Southeast Asian Nations Defense Ministers meeting. According to the Pentagon, the two leaders discussed the importance of substantive dialogue on reducing risk and enhancing operational safety. Secretary Austin raised concerns about the increasingly dangerous behavior demonstrated by the People's Liberation Army aircraft in the Indo-Pacific region that increases the risk of an accident. Secretary Austin also emphasized the need to responsibly manage competition between the United States and the PRC. Secretary of State Antony Blinken is now planning to visit the PRC in the new year. World leaders, he said at a press briefing, expect us to manage the relationship responsibly and also to find ways to cooperate, including on key issues like climate, global health, and macroeconomics. That's necessary, Secretary Blinken declared, not only for the betterment of the lives of our own people, but the interests of people around the world.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.